This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. If you have been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, managing your body weight is crucial to managing the disease, especially if you are obese. We've read widely in articles and news coming out from all over the world that both diabetes and obesity sort of increases your risk of severe COVID-19 complications if you do indeed catch the coronavirus. So on the line with me today, Dr. Teo Wei Ling. She's a consultant endocrinologist from Sunway Medical Center. We're going to be discussing obesity, diabetes, and COVID-19. Welcome to the show, Dr. Teo. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks.
I'm just going to start very quickly. Since the start of the pandemic, we've been told that people with pre-existing health conditions, or what we refer to as comorbidities, are more vulnerable to COVID-19. And looking at obesity and diabetes, why do both of these health issues increase your risk of severe symptoms in COVID-19 patients? And one of the things I want to tie in as well is that Malaysia is not the healthiest nation either. We have a large number of people who are either overweight or obese. We are have the largest number of diabetics in this region. That puts us at huge risk when it comes to COVID-19. And thank goodness we have it under control. But what is that risk? I mean, why does it make their symptoms more severe?
So there are a number of reasons. People who are obese are thought to have chronic low-grade inflammation that occurs long, chronically because they are obese, and therefore that makes them more susceptible to get a severe infection. It doesn't make them more susceptible to get the infection, but when they get the infection, they might get a more severe infection. Secondly, is that when somebody is obese, they are physically larger, so the lower parts of their lungs might not be able to be expanded as well. So when they get a COVID infection, their lower respiratory tract might be harder to be aired, and therefore they are susceptible to secondary infection, and therefore also needing sort of maybe ventilatory care and things. Thirdly, animal studies have shown that diabetes patients sometimes have a slightly reduced immune system, so their ability to fight the virus might be slightly lower than other people. People with diabetes, if their diabetes is not well controlled, their blood sugars might be high when they get infection, and that complicates matters. And finally, obese patients are more likely to get blood clots, and that has shown to make things more complicated in a severe COVID infection.
And we also have two types of people, right? We have people who are overweight or obese who have diabetes, but you also have people who are not overweight or obese who are walking around with diabetes. What difference does it make? I mean, which person is at a higher risk of having more severe complications?
Obviously, with obesity and diabetes, there is almost like a double whammy. Whereas if you have diabetes and you're not so overweight, then maybe perhaps you have a better chance. But I think ultimately sugar control is key, because we find that people with badly controlled diabetes pre-COVID infection usually do worse off than somebody who has diabetes but have well-controlled diabetes.
So the key word here is control, really. Mm-hmm. Which is a big problem in this country, would you say?
It's controlling. It's a massive problem in this country. The problem is patients who has diabetes, they get diagnosed, so they will see a doctor when they first diagnose with diabetes. The doctor might prescribe them one or two medicines. And then they either, we've got a few groups. One will complete the so-called course of medicine that the doctor has given, not replenishing it for a sort of a longer term medicine, and then they never go back and see a doctor anymore. Or second, they will religiously take the medicine but not go for any follow-up. So after many, many years, they continue to think that the medicine is the one for them and no further checkups are done. And actually in Malaysia, we find that, you know, first of all, diagnosing of diabetes is not great, but actually screening for complications of diabetes is even poorer.
We have one in five adults in Malaysia who has diabetes, according to the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2019. One in five of us has diabetes, and it increases with age, right? And yes. We've also seen with COVID, older people seem to be more susceptible to, they don't cope very well with COVID infections. And what more if you are indeed diabetic and older, right?
Correct. And so in the survey, it shows 18.3% of Malaysians have diabetes, but actually about 8.9% or almost half of them are unaware they have diabetes. So this is even more scary. So somebody has COVID infection and they hadn't realized that they had diabetes, and they, you know, they first present with symptoms of coronavirus and they have got high sugars, you know, so that doesn't, you know, it's not a good start.
It's interesting you said about controlling well-managed or well-controlled diabetes. What happens when you don't control it well? And how does that affect the inflammation and the how bad the infection ends up being?
So when you don't control your blood sugars well, there in diabetes, we have many complications. So there could be kidney leaking proteins in your kidney called nephropathy. We could have problems with our eyes, which is called retinopathy, problems with our nerves, called neuropathy. And people with diabetes are sort of increased risk of cardiovascular and strokes, you know, things like that. So screening is important because we want to find these, the start of these complications, so that we can actually do something about it long term. It's no use coming, not say no use, but you know, it could be better if we find this early, because then the outlook would be better. Whereas if they came later, then the outlook is slightly poorer. And for people who has coronavirus infection, obviously, the more complications of diabetes you have, again, that is doesn't sit well if, you know, the chances are more likely that they will get a more severe infection because their baseline health is not great.
So I'm just trying to put myself in this situation, right? So I go in, I'm COVID-19 positive, I have blood glucose levels, which are fluctuating because I haven't managed it well. How do these fluctuations affect how I... Is it because of it reduces my immunity?
So fluctuating blood sugars in itself does not reduce your immunity. But studies in rats with diabetes have found that they have reduced function of some of their immune cells. However, fluctuating blood sugars may cause other problems, including fluctuating electrolytes or salt levels, which may pose a different set of problems. People with fluctuating blood sugar are also those who are more likely to have poorly controlled diabetes, and in this group of patients, they may have other complications of diabetes that could complicate a COVID infection.
Okay, so it affects the response to treatment and how you cope and come out of it. Okay,
yeah,
got it. Before somebody is actually diagnosed with diabetes, and as you said, about 8.9% of Malaysians, which is about half of the Malaysians who have diabetes, are walking around unaware that they have diabetes. And the thing is, you can be what you call pre-diabetic first before you become a diabetic. And why is it so important to pick up at the pre-diabetic stage as compared to once you're fully blown diabetic?
So pre-diabetes stage is a very unique stage because it gives you an opportunity to do something good for your long-term health. Not everyone will find themselves in the pre-diabetes stage unless you do regular blood checks, and this is usually discovered incidentally. Before 2011, no one really thought type 2 diabetes was reversible. But there's a professor in the United Kingdom, Newcastle, Professor Roy Taylor. He did a small study on 11 type 2 diabetes patients who were at the early stages of their diagnosis, so less than 3 years of being diagnosed with diabetes. And he put them on an extremely low calorie diet. So the key word here is extremely low, of 600 calories a day. 3 months after completion of this study, 7 out of 11 participants did not have diabetes. Now, this is certainly not what I would recommend anybody to do without any medical supervision.
It was just about 600 calories a day.
But the reason I quote this study is to drive home a point that actually weight management at the pre-diabetes stage or the early stages of type 2 diabetes can put the condition in remission or be reversible. And I use the term remission because if that person puts the weight back on, the pre-diabetes or the type 2 diabetes, it will return. So currently in the United Kingdom, there is a study called the DIRECT trial. DIRECT stands for Diabetes Remission Clinical Trial, which is a randomized controlled trial of primary care practices providing a structured weight program, incorporating the principles of this original study, of course not as low as 600 calories. And it compares that with our current best practice, which is a doctor giving an advice, please try to lose weight, please exercise more. And actually, so far, the trial in their first year, they have found that almost half or 46% of people with type 2 diabetes up to a duration of 6 years diagnosis has achieved remission of type 2 diabetes at 12 months following this weight management program. So these results have really changed perception of a condition previously assumed to be permanent. And even if a diabetes patient is unable to lose so much weight that they can sort of reverse the condition or put the condition in remission, weight loss, even a small amount, is very helpful to improve the body's insulin sensitivity. And therefore, weight management on top of medicines is really, really important.
So, you know, we talk about exercise, we talk about diet. Really, Dr. Teo, it's more about the diet. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Though exercise is important too, lah.
Yeah. But, you know, 70%, 80%, would you say is actually diet?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So, you know, we'll come back and find out more about diets because there's so many weight loss programs out there. 600 calories a day is really very little, Dr. Teo. I'm just trying to figure out what I can actually eat for 600 calories.
Not 600. I wouldn't go about doing a 600 calorie. I mean, this is just a kind of, you
correct,
know, study situation. Yeah.
Yes. So we'll come back and, you know, there are a lot of diets out there which people seem to be, you know, jumping on the bandwagon and hoping that, you know, they're but you know, with people also jumping onto different diets every now and again, this is not working, you know, and then I'd try something different. What is that also doing to your health and your blood glucose levels? We'll come back and find out more up next. On the line with me is Dr. Teo Wei Ling. She's a consultant endocrinologist from Sunway Medical Center. We are discussing obesity, diabetes, and COVID-19. We will be back right after this on BFM 89.9.
Managing diabetes can be a daily challenge, especially when you have to make sustainable and long-term lifestyle changes. Without proper management and treatment, it could lead to worse complications. Individualized care provided by a multidisciplinary team is important to help you keep the disease under control. For more information, visit sunwaymedical.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. It's Health and Living. I am Meera Sivasothi. On the line with me, consultant endocrinologist from Sunway Medical Center, Dr. Teo Wei Ling. We are discussing obesity, diabetes and COVID-19. It's interesting how, you know, Dr. Teo has, you know, shed more light about the connection between obesity, diabetes and COVID-19. We know that people who have these pre-existing conditions don't cope very well, you know, when they are infected with COVID-19. And you've given us good reasons for that. Obesity affects the lower part of the lungs and how it actually copes. That's one aspect. You've spoken to us about how diabetes, for an example, reduces your immune system to a very large extent. And with obesity also, you are prone to blood clots sometimes. And all of this can complicate matters when you have been diagnosed with COVID-19. You're trying to actually recover from it. So we've spoken about diabetes and how in Malaysia we have about About 20%. I'm just going to use a ballpark figure of 20% of Malaysians who are diabetic. And it's interesting that you have said now that half of them are unaware that they are indeed diabetic. So very good reasons to get tested, because early stages of diabetes, you can actually reverse it. And the hard part of this conversation is that diet plays a huge role in how you help reverse this disease. So let's talk about the diet. How drastic can it be, and how drastic should it be? And my next question is, with people jumping on different diets all the time, what does that actually do to the system if you don't pick a diet that's actually sustainable in the long run?
So I don't really believe in going through any sort of fad diets or all these, you know, the diets that you hear about being banded about, like ketogenic diet, or I don't know, cabbage only diet or whatever. I don't believe in that. I believe in actually making sustainable lifestyle changes, incorporating a good diet. So things like, for example, I would say, you know, we are as a society eat a lot more carbohydrates than we should. Okay. So I would say, yes, we need to reduce our carbohydrate intake, but I still believe that we need some carbohydrates. We need to choose our carbohydrates wisely. So carbohydrates come from foods that are made out of flour. So it could be rice, noodles, pasta, roti canai, biscuits, cakes, you know. But actually, maybe we should choose better carbohydrates, such as complex carbohydrates are better than simple carbohydrates. So things like wholemeal bread, brown rice, oats, quinoa, amongst others, because complex carbohydrate gives a longer lasting energy and it impacts the blood sugar more slowly compared to simple carbohydrates. And the other thing that we need to look about is our plate, you know, of food. The government recommendation of a healthy plate is the suku-suku separuh plate. So separuh of the plate, or half of the plate, should consist of vegetables and fruits. So 2/3 vegetables, 1/3 fruit. And then the suku part is, one is the proteins, so such as meat, eggs, tofu, beans. And then the last suku, or the last quarter, should be carbohydrates. Now, if you think about our national dish, the nasi lemak, the main part of the dish is the nasi. And then surrounding the nasi is a small proportion of condiments such as 2 or 3 slices of cucumbers, kacang, ikan bilis, and sambal. And occasionally, you might have an ayam goreng rempah in it. And this is a far cry from the healthy plate that we should all be having, whereby majority of our plate should be vegetables followed by protein and carbohydrate. And what is more shocking is, according to the National Health and Mobility Survey 2019, almost 95% of adults do not consume the recommended adequate vegetables and fruits of 5 servings a day. So I think we should really start with what we eat day to day. We are a nation that eats a lot of carbohydrates, like that's the majority of our plate. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing would be, you know, sugar in our drinks. Malaysians love their teh tarik, and then the younger folk loves their bubble tea. And I just want to highlight that actually in one teh tarik, there's about 5 to 6 teaspoons of sugar, which is about 20 to 25 grams of sugar. And in a bubble tea with 100% sugar, it can range anything from 8 teaspoons to 20 teaspoons. So that's like 40 to 100 grams of sugar. And the daily recommended intake of sugar for adults should be no more than 30 grams of sugar. So we seriously need to sort of reduce sugar in our drinks. And it might be difficult at the start to have no sugar in tea or coffee or whatever, but actually our palates will get used to it, and it will change over time, and we will be fine. So these are actually the two main things that I want people to think about as a starter. So rather than go and look at, okay, what diet I can reduce my weight, you know what I mean? I need people to make lifestyle changes of the choices that they choose. So when they go to the shop to order something, you know, they make good choices.
And that's the only sustainable way?
That's the start of a sustainable way. And then, of course, once they can cope with this, you know, they'll find that actually they will start losing weight. But to this has to be sustainable. It's not a yo-yo thing that we should be going for. I mean, a lot of people start a diet and then they lose a lot of weight, and then the motivation, you know, sort of decreases, and therefore the weight creeps up again. So that's really not a good way.
You know, bless you, Dr. Teo, but that is a utopian world when it comes to Malaysia. It's not happening. I can tell you it's not going to happen. So I'm like, how do we work with these fad diets and get people on it and make it sustainable, you know, because we're desperate here. You know, very few people are actually going to go down that sustainable route, right? I mean, you've seen it. You see it all the time. But what are the... Okay, let's talk about the bad side of yo-yoing in as far as these fad diets and then your weight. What does that do for your blood sugar levels?
So if you were non-diabetic, it doesn't do much except that your weight yo-yos, okay? But for people who has diabetes, their blood sugars go high and low. So for example, if they were in a good phase of their diet, so they lose lots of weight, they might get their diabetes check and their diabetes check might improve. The doctor will say, oh, maybe you can reduce your medication by one or two tablets. And then they think, oh, this is really good news. You know, that means sometimes patients think or get the impression that when the doctor reduces medicine, that they can then go and jolly, you know? So then they go and slack in their diet, and then weight creeps back on, and then actually diabetes become worse. And then again, we need to add medicines or even add more, you know? So for people who has diabetes, yo-yoing in weight is actually very unhelpful. But people with no diabetes yet, you know, it doesn't really have much long-term impact on their blood glucose, because actually their own body is regularizing their blood sugars.
If there's too much of constant regularization that's happening, does that work against the body as well? I mean, and I'm talking, you know, really. Over years.
Not really, I don't think.
Okay. What about if you lose weight too fast? Does that affect the management of diabetes?
For somebody who's got diabetes, if they lose weight so fast. So let me give you an example. One of the examples for losing weight so fast is somebody who perhaps had a bariatric surgery. Mm-hmm. So in bariatric surgery, the surgeon would cut part of your stomach, take part of your stomach away. So in essence, you are forced to be in this sort of mandatory diet whereby initially it might be liquid only, and then it starts off with very small amounts of food. So they actually lose weight by the bucket loads. So in people who has diabetes, just before their bariatric surgery, we will actually stop all their medicines, because it just shows that just by reducing your food intake, your blood sugars just tumble down and you don't actually need diabetes medicine anymore.
Okay. But that's very drastic. So when does somebody decide, or when do you decide bariatric surgery is an option or should be an option for a diabetic?
So bariatric surgery gives very promising results. So some studies have quoted up to 70% reversibility of diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. But it's not really a surgery that everybody can undergo. Usually it's people who has a BMI of above 35, who has diabetes, high blood pressure. They should be often sort of younger age group rather than older age group. And actually, more importantly, is they have the resilience to undertake this, because it's not reversible. So once you have this surgery, you are now unable to perhaps even eat a whole roti canai. You know, can you withstand that? You know, you can only maybe have, you know, half a shake of some sort or soups or what initially. So it's something that actually some centers would would mandate that they go through some sort of psychological assessment before going through bariatric surgery. So that is important. And then obviously the surgery, the outcome of surgery in terms of health is shown to be very good, but there are other aspects of it that we need to think about. And post-bariatric surgery, there might be nutritional problems because, again, they cannot eat so much. They might have to take supplements and vitamins through tablets and things just so that they don't suffer consequences of nutritional deficiencies.
Okay, so first things first, not everybody is a candidate. Secondly, it requires a lot of monitoring pre-surgery, during and after surgery as well.
Yes.
And you know, it's interesting that you say that they might need some kind of supplements as well, which ties back to the fact that a 600 calorie diet doesn't work either, because you will need complete nutrition.
Correct.
Hence, I can see why you're saying create or work towards that sustainable diet for our own benefits, right?
Yes.
We do see younger people now who are obese and who are diabetic. What are some of your concerns as far as younger people are concerned?
Yeah, so about 30 years ago, people thought of type 2 diabetes as a disease that affect older people, you know, some uncle, auntie, grandparents. But these days, this is not the case anymore. You know, I have seen patients as young as 18, 19, 20 years old who has diabetes. And unfortunately, they are very obese too. So this is certainly a trend that is very worrying, because having diagnosed with diabetes at a younger age means to say the chances of them having a diabetes complication at a younger age is also higher. And this actually puts a lot of strain to healthcare resources. And over time, these people might be young and have disabling diabetes complications. So I really, really like to put it out there that actually get tested for your blood sugar and get treated soon as possible. It's not the end of the world, because, you know, now, like I said, you know, it could be reversible. We have very robust treatment for it. It's better to treat it than to put your head under the sand, I would say.
Would you say it's highly, or likelihood of reversing diabetes is higher at a younger age group rather than an older age group?
Yes, and especially in early stages of diabetes. Also, the other thing also, if you were young and you have diabetes and somebody said you need to lose weight, your motivation is there. You know, you are more motivated to want to improve your health, because you are more likely to want to improve yourself and not have any complications. You want to enjoy yourself, so you need to be of the best of your health. That's what I think.
What happens if you have lost weight and all of that, but it doesn't reverse the diabetes? What does that tell you?
So there is a chance of that happening as well, but that usually is at a slightly older age. So, for example, if you lost weight and you've done all the things that we had asked you to do, then actually it's just the pancreas not failing in itself. So over the many years, the pancreas will start to fail. But that's why this so-called reversing of diabetes should happen in the first few years of diagnosing of diabetes.
Okay, so once you've passed that window, it's going to be a little bit more challenging.
Yes, very much so.
So get diagnosed as soon as you can, because, you know, if you are walking around unaware of it, time is ticking.
Correct.
As far as you being able to reverse it. What about medications? Some medications used to treat diabetes also contribute to weight gain. How do you help patients balance that effect on diabetes?
Yeah, some older diabetes medication can contribute to weight gain, but it is also very effective in controlling your blood sugar. And these medicines may be necessary in the treatment of some individuals' diabetes. The newer diabetes medicines are more weight neutral, and some even help with weight loss. So my advice to patients is to discuss their diabetes treatment with their diabetes doctor. And we always promote individualized treatment for individual patient, depending on their age, their weight, their lifestyle. So it's important to emphasize that people see their diabetes doctor regularly so that medications can regularly be reviewed and be optimized. And also it gives an opportunity for the diabetologist to screen these patients for complications.
You know, you got me at some diabetic medications help to lose weight. Come on, Dr. Teo, what is that? I mean, is that any sort of motivation for people to get tested and go and get diagnosed?
So I have to put a big caveat there, you know, despite us saying that some medicines help with weight loss, but actually, ultimately, portion control is also important. You know, these are not like magic medicine, you know, suddenly you take this and you start losing weight without changing your food choices or your portion control. Yeah. Portion control and food choices remain. The medicine may maybe help it along the way.
We've had a lot of stress issues, anxiety issues, some people slipping into depression given COVID-19 and what we've had to deal with or cope with, Dr. Teo. Does stress affect weight management and diabetes?
Yes. So stress impacts significantly on a patient's weight management because some people, they deal with stress by comfort eating and some people deal with stress by not eating at all. So in this way, if a patient is on diabetes medicines and if they comfort eat, they might find that they need more diabetes medicine to control their blood sugar. And if they are the opposite, they don't eat very much, then they should be more vigilant in checking their blood sugars and really think about speaking to their diabetologist.
Okay. And so do you think that COVID-19 is a good turning point or a start for people to make healthier lifestyle choices, or do you think it's Malaysians being Malaysians, we're just going to continue doing what we're doing?
So COVID-19 and subsequently the MCO has given people the opportunity to reflect on their health because, you know, you've got time and you think about these things, right? And actually, what I find recently seeing my patients is that people with the MCO, people are now more aware about how unhealthy the foods that they have been consuming when they eat out or do a takeaway when things get busy, you know, when they have the busy lives. And actually, during the MCO, a lot of people have upped their culinary skills. And actually, it's incredibly important that happened because actually they need to realize that cooking at home is not as bad or as onerous as people might think. So I really hope that people use these newfound skills as we are in the recovery phase of the MCO and also beyond. Because I think it makes a difference. It might not be obvious differences, but, you know, in terms of the oil that we use in their cooking versus eating out, you know, these little things do help.
Absolutely. I just got an idea from what you just said, that we should start a radio show on called Keeping Up With Your Culinary Skills, you know, from MCO. I mean, I think it's great. I think it's just a question of time as well, because people were all stuck at home and so the motivation was there. There are a whole lot of other external factors now that, you know, a lot of people are going back to work, you know, traveling time and all of that. But I think you can make the time. It just requires a bit of planning. And I think that will be a great show to do coming up, Keeping Up With Your Culinary Skills. Would you have a message for us on COVID-19, obesity and diabetes?
I just want to stress that it is alarming, the rising levels of obesity. And I actually want to bring up a very interesting study that was done some years ago now, whereby they looked at different BMIs or different weight in different ethnic groups. So they compared a Caucasian with an East Asian person, which is a Chinese or a Japanese. And the study has found that if an East Asian woman has a BMI of 28, they are 3 times more likely to develop diabetes than a Caucasian woman of the exact same weight. And in men, East Asian men of a BMI of 28 is twice more likely to get diabetes compared to the Caucasian counterpart.
Wow. So do we know why?
is genetics. So weight plays an important role in Asians. We are more sensitive to obesity. We develop diabetes at lower BMIs compared to our Western counterparts. So these statistics of overweight and obesity, whereby one in two of us have a BMI of above 25, it's very worrying, because if the trends is to be continued, our diabetes rates will be so high, you know, it'll be one in four, one in three of us, you know, that has diabetes. So I couldn't stress enough that actually obesity is a major, major problem in our society. And actually, perhaps we need to do things sort of in a larger scale from a public health perspective. You know, people talk about imposing sugar taxes on drink manufacturers so that they put less sugar in the drinks. You know, talking about food, you know, food in schools needs to be healthy, because we also want our children to learn that what is healthy, what is unhealthy. So food in schools should be even healthier than what it is now. Maybe even food labeling, you know, we should have better food labeling so we know exactly what we are consuming. So these are some of the things that, you know, perhaps we need to be thinking about something more drastic like that. And again, you know, people need to get tested, because it's just a finger prick test in your friendly pharmacy will give you an indication whether you're okay or not okay. If you're not okay, then you can go on and do sort of a more in-depth test. But actually, testing is really important so that we know exactly, you know, who has diabetes and who hasn't. And the person who has diabetes is, you know, they might feel, oh my God, this is terrible. But actually, in the long run, it is beneficial to their health to know about it.
Okay, so the word is, the research is out. We have to change our diet. We can't change our parents, unfortunately. And we have that working against us in this part of the world, is what you're saying, right?
Yes.
So, wow. Yes, so we need to work on public health policy as well. Thank you very much for joining us today, Dr. Teo. That was enlightening indeed. That was Dr. Teo Wei Ling, consultant endocrinologist from Sunway Medical Center, speaking to us about obesity, diabetes and COVID-19 on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.